You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone.
You are expecting, out of this planet of, what, 7 billion people, 8 billion people, however many, out of this planet with so many people, you are expecting to find one person, and most people will expect to do it several times, because a lot of, most people as we know them are serial monogamous, so you're expecting to find more than once to find one person who can meet all of your wants and needs, and that you can meet all of their wants and needs.
I think generally late capitalism is not conducive to feeling comfortable or safe with anything. Everything is transient and temporary, and you could lose it all any day, and I think a lot of that leaks into the sort of safety that you can expect to feel in a romantic relationship. So maybe it's a trend that people don't feel fulfilled romantically, but also there's a ton of people who literally don't have the time because they're working several jobs to pay their rent, to have a place to aspirationally invite a Tinder date over to. And then by the time they're done working all those jobs and paying all that rent, there's no time or space.
That is from the official trailer for the film Romantic Chorus, a feature animated documentary. The film is focused on sex and romantic connections, featuring 21 diverse interviews with people from a wide range of genders, cultural backgrounds, abilities, and sexual orientations, as they discuss sex, monogamy, fear, and technology. The team, as I said, is a collaboration. There are production staff, and there are 17 animators from 10 different countries, creating a unique and dynamic film. Its world premiere is January 29th to the 31st, and you can catch it at romanticchorus.com. I've got three of the people who worked on the film with me today. First up, we're going to start with Jeff Giordano. Since 2004, Jeff has been directing documentaries. In 2020, he won an award for disability justice for the 70-minute documentary, The God-Given Talent, The Creative Life of Charles Curtis Blackwell. In support of the animated documentary, Romantic Chorus, Jeff directed and co-produced and conducted all 21 interviews for the film. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Jeff.
Thank you for having me, Tristan.
So I'm beginning with you because Romantic Chorus began with you and Aaron Gwynn in 2018. Tell me how this idea came about.
I had been making documentaries, as you said in the beginning, for a while. And I started to notice in terms of romance and romantic connections that I didn't see any documentaries really explore the themes quite this way. And I felt like I needed to make this film and collaborate with a lot of amazing people to put this out in the world and really contribute something and really create a fresh discussion about sex and romantic connections moving forward into the future.
And what are your ultimate goals for the film?
I would like to show it in colleges and universities down the road beyond the premiere. We are subtitling the film in Spanish and French. We also will have English subtitles. So we plan to have Spanish language screenings and French, and to really partner up with a lot of community organizations in the future as well for screenings, and let the film be a way to help people kind of learn more, and hopefully they figure things out for themselves. The film, I don't think, is very prescriptive. I think it more asks questions and helps people kind of confront things about themselves that they're trying to figure out, whether it's their needs or their wants.
God, do young people need this. No, I mean, in that, you know, sex education in the United States is a total farce and a disaster. And I do a lot of lecturing on colleges and universities, and they don't know anything. Most people come from a sort of abstinence only, no talking about sex. That's the majority of the kind of quote education they get. And it's funny because when you get on campus, there are all these trainings, right? Sexual assault prevention, diversity and inclusion, academic integrity, all these things that are part of orientation, right? But no one actually makes anyone take a class on relationships.
Yeah.
And so I find myself talking to college students, and they're really fumbling in the dark, literally and figuratively, because we sort of expect people to know their options, to know the skill set, to know how to communicate, when we've actually never given them the tools.
And I think the technology it's kind of gotten ahead of us, where it feels like we're all collectively catching up to that and making sense of how to portray ourselves online if we choose that route to find romantic connections. So, I mean, I could speak a little more. The movie has 21 interviewees, 17 animators. As you said, the themes of fear, sex, technology, and monogamy. And there is a diversity of animation styles and a big collaboration with 17 animators. And part of my philosophy with my editor, Aaron Gwynn, was to give the animators freedom. They chose the sections of the film that they wanted to animate in the style of their preference. And it's really a chorus of human voices. And we have people who are polyamorous in the film, monogamous and bisexual, married. We do have somebody who's trans in the film. And I really wanted to include these voices to kind of create an ensemble portrait of modern, you know, to the best of our abilities, modern romance, modern dating, modern sex, modern love, like all these things, and really delve into that in a very concise way to help people, as we said earlier.
Dealing with all these people sounds like herding cats. Because it's like 21 interviews, 17 animators, you know, it just from a production standpoint.
It's part of the fun.
Okay, yeah. So tell me what the process has been like.
So we had planned for this film to be animated by multiple artists. And I think given the state of the world, we utilize technology to its fullest by having many video chats, thousands of emails, and really trying to get specific in terms of what the film will look like. And it's been guided by the voices the whole time. We had an assembly cut of just the audio back in, I think it was February. And so that was really the groundwork. And we utilized that to show animators to gain their interest, and as I said, let them have the freedom to animate the sections that they desired as the scenes spoke to them, maybe personally.
And why animation as the medium?
I've never made an animated film. It's been on my mind for a long time. And my philosophy as a filmmaker is to continue to experiment and really try to do new things. And to the best of my skills, my experience, bring, you know, a fresh take to things, and then getting into the aesthetic. I've seen some animated documentaries, but again, nothing quite like Romantic Chorus. And I think with it being animated, it's more accessible to some people to actually watch. And I think it will require multiple viewings in terms of really listening to all the voices, taking in the imagery, and just kind of letting yourself go along for the ride. It's the kind of movie I wish that I watched when I was in my early 20s. I think it would have helped me figure some things out and just kind of create a good list of questions to kind of, you know, that each human being, I think at some point, they are trying to figure out.
Accessibility seems important to you.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I've worked with people with disabilities in the past, and I've made multiple films about people with visual impairments. And I like mainstream media. I like mainstream movies, but I do find myself on my own time watching more documentaries, watching more world cinema, countries I've never been to, you know, looking at their cinema. And I think it's important to, you know, include people's voices and stories that normally are not seen in a lot of like big productions, whether it's film, TV, you know, a lot of the arts. So I do find myself interested in these different perspectives than my own. And I think for Romantic Chorus, there are a lot of overlapping feelings about fear, for example. I think in the movie, when people see it, there's a lot of similar feelings and concerns, you know, regardless of your cultural background and your own experience. I think fear is a big one that a lot of people can find a lot of common ground to agree on, like similar fears of being alone, getting old, not having a partner, you know, struggles with pleasure, expressing what your needs are. I found that to be like a unifying thread throughout the film. And it feels good, I think, to collaborate. That's one of the main reasons why I make films, is the collaboration. I could not and would not want to do all this by myself.
You know, I've had a couple people recently on the show talking about the nervous system and sort of how we're wired. And many of us are walking around operating from fear.
Yes.
And it's part of our sort of primitive lizard brain. And it's a really intense response and emotion, but also it is a terrifying place from which to try to voice or negotiate your needs, or just communicate in partnership with someone or someone's. So I'm interested that like fear is in the mix here, because I've been talking a lot about it on this show and about how like our decision-making can be, if it comes from a place of fear, it's often sort of gets scrambled in the process. And it's coming from a place of kind of deficit. So it wreaks havoc on people's emotional regulation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, that's what I hope with the film. I think it brings up questions for people to consider. And, you know, we realize we have these similar desires, and to help us kind of live a little more honestly and to be able to express ourselves in certain ways where we are still being respectful, we can still trust intimate partners, and, you know, feel like we're part of a community, we're part of a partnership. I think I find that with documentary particularly, I think it's the best concentrated way to communicate to people rather than suggesting they read three books. They might not have time to read three books, but they may have time to watch an 85-minute movie about these kind of topics.
And you probably had some ideas going into this and themes emerged. Is there any sort of theme that emerged that surprised you?
I would say that the biggest surprise, I think monogamy or polyamory, it can be this fluid thing and very debatable and really make or break relationships. I still find that theme to be very complex and kind of mysterious. And I think for a lot of people, it is maybe something that I've learned, that maybe they have stretches of monogamy and things are perfect, things are, you know, satisfactory, and then they open up the relationship or vice versa. I think that to me has been the most fascinating part. And the people who have the courage to really say, like, well, this is the kind of relationship I want, rather than just going along with whatever their partner wants and not really deciding. And I think mixing technology with relationship styles, it can maybe create extra challenges if you're not honest and really, you know, say early on, like, what you actually are looking for in somebody else.
Right. I mean, this is the sort of monogamy by default instead of by choice question, right?
Right.
That we encourage people to, for example, question and explore their sexual orientation, but we don't necessarily put forth that it's an option to design your own relationship. And it doesn't have to look like the relationships that we see modeled in Hollywood or that we see all around us in community and family and our peers.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break. I want to remind people that on Facebook and Instagram, you can find out about this documentary at Romantic Chorus Documentary. The website is romanticchorus.com. Coming up, I'm going to talk to two people who were part of this amazing documentary, Imani Jahan and Jade Terrio. So stay with us, more after the break. Are you ready to leave 2020 behind and set new intentions for this year? I am. So whether you're ready to jumpstart a lifestyle change or be more mindful of what you're putting in your body, Saqqara makes it easy. I've really wanted to start eating better, but let me be real here. I don't want to cook. So when Saqqara started sending me prepared meals to try out for this ad, I was all in. Saqqara's organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with powerful plant-based ingredients, and they're designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. Guess what, folks? They promised it, and it happened for me. The menu of creative, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners changes weekly, so you'll never get bored, and it's delivered fresh anywhere in the U.S. The meals were all terrific. One of the best ones was the Phuket bowl with red pepper lemongrass curry. I threw it all together in a pan for 5 minutes, and voila, restaurant quality Thai food just like that. The ingredients are fresh, local to me in Los Angeles, and this curry was super flavorful without being too spicy. Along with delicious plant-rich meals, Saqqara also offers daily wellness essentials, like supplements and herbal teas to support your nutrition. Experience the power of plants as medicine with their best-selling metabolism super powder. Made with organic raw cacao, it works to boost energy, eliminate bloating, minimize sugar cravings, and reduce fatigue. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/Tristan, or you can enter promo code Tristan at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/Tristan, to get 20% off your first order. This is a really good deal, folks. I hope you take advantage of it. sakara.com/Tristan. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today about this really fascinating and I think groundbreaking feature animated documentary called Romantic Chorus. It will have its world premiere at the end of this month. And now I want to bring in Imani Johan, a 31-year-old queer Black Philadelphia native residing in Los Angeles. She has worked in the adult industry over the last few years, from managing an upscale adult boutique to being the communications manager at kink.com to now owning her own business, Decadent Devices, with a mission to provide pleasure to all bodies, as all bodies deserve to feel good. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Imani.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're in LA. You could have come over if we weren't in a pandemic.
True.
We could have done it live. So tell me how you got involved with Romantic Chorus.
So I met Jeff. I guess I don't know if this is okay to say, but we met on OkCupid and became friends. And then he knew about the work I was doing at the time, like working for Kink, and that I was polyamorous. And he asked me to be a part of his project.
And at first, like, what did you think when he sort of proposed the idea?
I thought it was a great idea. I thought it was, you know, a great idea to have a bunch of different people talking about something that is pretty universal. But, you know, providing kind of like the sort of educational aspect to it to like help other people who may find themselves in similar situations.
Do you think in the past decade there's been more dialogue around polyamory?
Yes, I think to a degree, yes. I think there's been more conversation, mostly because more people are partaking in it. So I think over the, you know, especially over the last few years, there's been quite an influx of chatter in that conversation.
The sort of more visible mainstream polyamory movement has been accused, though, of being too white and cis and straight. I'm wondering if that's been your experience.
Yes, to a degree. I feel like it to a degree, yes, but also given like how I got started in polyamory and like where, like basically like location wise, it was a little different. Like I'm from Philadelphia. I only just recently moved to California within the last year or so. But, you know, the polyamory community out there, while yes, the majority is white, there's still a lot of diversity. So I think you do have a lot more people talking about those problems, but you're not experiencing those problems on your own. And
how did you get into poly?
So I would not recommend the route that I went for getting into polyamory. I was dating someone at the time. Instead of ending our relationship, we opened our relationship. And then I met someone who was already polyamorous and started dating them and then broke up with the original partner that I was with.
No, but I think that's honest. You know, I feel like sometimes we paint a picture of we all met at a polyamory workshop and we were all already polyamorous.
Right.
And then we got together. And people get together for all reasons. People get together because relationships have ended. People get together because of cheating on a partner and then finding out, hey, I don't want to be monogamous. I feel like we've got to be honest about the ways in which people may come to it They don't all have to be kind of neat and pretty.
Definitely.
Let's talk about your business, Decadent Devices. I want to tell people they can find it online, decadentdevices.com, but there's no E in devices. So it's D-V-I-C-E-S. Tell me how that came about.
So, well, I found myself out of a job earlier this year. And, you know, as a lot of people did. And I moved to LA. And at the time, I was thinking about, like, doing, like, toy reviews. Doing reviews on adult toys on, like, YouTube. And I did do a couple videos for that. And I'll probably will get back to it once I work out some things with my website. But I decided instead of, like, it made more sense to have my own business providing these products and, you know, at least becoming a resource for people who can actually, like, you know, either ask me questions or I can hopefully preemptively answer questions that, like, big websites aren't answering, as well as, like, it just made more sense instead of taking, like, and getting a portion of sales for, like, affiliate marketing and things. It just made more sense to just own my own business. I already knew, especially having managed a sex shop before, I already knew, like, distributors, and I knew, and working in other fields, I knew how to build a website. So it just made the most sense. Nothing else was going on, especially with COVID. So starting a website seemed like a good idea.
And I have a question, since you've been in the business for a while, because the sex toy industry has really grown and evolved and kind of exploded with new technology, new products, better products. What do you think is still not out there for people in terms of not just toys, but any kind of sexual wellness products?
I think right now, I think what's really lacking in the adult toy industry, I would say probably a way to make toys easier for people who aren't exactly able-bodied to use. Like, I myself have some mobility issues, and sometimes some toys are very hard to maneuver. And, like, especially if you buy a toy that's, you know, over $50 or $100 and you get it and you can't use it, it can be kind of disheartening. And, like, I've experienced, you know, feeling like, what's wrong with my body that I can't even use this toy? So I think the adult toy space is lacking in that area.
I mean, I feel the same way. I just tried out a toy and I felt like design kind of trumped function. In other words, it was super sleek and it was beautiful looking, but
may I ask what it was?
Yeah, it was the Satisfier.
Okay, that's surprising. Okay,
so it's like super sleek and beautiful, but the buttons are in order for it to not have like actual buttons, and I think for it to be waterproof, the buttons are just like slightly raised. Okay. And when you're in the midst of being sexually aroused, it's just, I felt like it was confusing and they were hard to find once like my hands were slippery with lube I was like slightly, not disoriented, but you know, at a level of arousal where your brain's not totally working in the same way as when you just like take it out of the box.
Right. Right. I'm not sure exactly which toy you're talking about, but that does sound in line with, a couple of the products that I do know from Satisfier. So I can definitely see why that might be a problem.
Yeah. And also just not being intuitive about what changes mode, what changes speed. I feel like everyone wants to basically decrease the amount of buttons, but that increases the degree of difficulty for me.
Right. And that's why, and the real issue with that is I'm not sure who are the designers at Satisfier, but I know overwhelmingly industry-wide, it's people without vulvas who are designing toys for people with vulvas. Right. And it turns out to be like pretty, you can tell, but at the end of the day, it's like, you can tell.
Well, and I like beautiful. I mean, there's nothing wrong with some beautiful, highly modern aesthetics. I'm into that. But if it's like form over function, then I'm not into it.
Yeah, which is where a lot of, especially some high-end brands are like that too, where it's just like, we're going to sell you this thing that looks really nice. It looks really beautiful. You could put it on your coffee table, but it doesn't actually do what you want it to do.
And for years, I think also people of different body sizes have also argued that like not enough toys are long enough or have a handle. And so reach is a problem.
Yeah. Reach can be a problem. It's pretty much like if it's not a wand, like if it's not a wand style vibrator, pretty much reach is might be an issue for most toys, depending on your size. In general, I haven't had too much problems with that. Certain toys do seem they're harder to use than others, but if they could do more research and work into figuring out solving that problem, that would probably be great for a lot of people.
I want to bring in our next guest, but remind people that you can find Imani Johan at Imani Johan. On Instagram. And also, she's sort of the queen of TikTok.
What?
So if TikTok is your jam, you're on fire on TikTok. My next guest also participated as a subject in the film. I want to welcome Jade Theriault, who's a cyborg who combines provocative thought with moving furniture. Jade was manufactured in the Bay Area and has performed at many showcases, including Tourette's, Without Regrets, and Critical Hit. They performed at The Punchline, Cobb's Comedy Club, Tommy T's, and Delirium's weekly show, #TrivialLol. Festival credits include SF Sketchfest, the Art of Female Comedy Festival in Wichita, Kansas, and the West Side Comedy Festival in Santa Monica, where they were honored for Best Joke of the Night. Jade starred in Malik Almaya's Run in 2018 and was on an episode of MTV Decoded. Most recently, Jade featured in Troma's Divide and Conquer as an understudy for Ron Jeremy, who was forced to resign from the project due to scandal. I think Ron Jeremy's in jail now. Anyway, welcome to the show, Jade.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Look,
I guess I have to start with best joke of the night. Can you tell us the joke?
What was the joke? It's been so long. I bought a vibrator. I still don't know how I'm going to hold it, but I have it. It's there. In the meantime, I've just been driving over cobblestones.
Oh my God, that plays nicely with what I was talking about with Imani. That was like a really good segue. I should have used that as a segue.
Oh, good. I love it.
So tell me about how you came to this film and what it was like making it.
Jeff reached out to me, I believe. He's going to hate me for this. I don't remember how we met. I'd heard of him in the art circle, and I think he discovered me and he reached out and he told me about the film, and I thought it was a really good idea, and I love talking about myself because I have an ego the size of Australia. And so I said, yeah. So yeah, he came over, we did the interview. God, can you hear that lawnmower? I hope it's not ruining my...
I can't really hear the lawnmower, no.
So of course the lawnmower starts right when my interview is here.
Of course, always.
He came over, we did the interview, it was really interesting, and I saw the previews for the animated part. I love animation personally, so this was really exciting for me.
And one of the things I noticed is that for some of the interviews, which are animated. They're not animated in like a realistic representation of the interviewee. Jeff can also speak on this probably in the next segment. But your animation is you.
Yeah, the rotoscoping. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really like, and it's really beautiful and well done.
Oh, thank you. Well, not thank you to me, but to the animator, yes. It was, I thought it was very well done, for sure.
You're also in, there's a bunch of different trailers that are set on themes. You're in the sex theme trailer. So is much of what you talk about sex?
I didn't think it was, but I guess it was. My mind just goes there automatically every waking moment.
I mean, what was part of your interview? Tell me.
I remember, and there's the lawnmower guy walking by. Okay. and the leaf blower. The interview, I mean, it was divided into four categories, I believe. And it was, I mean, I'm trying to remember. I just talked about my romantic history, I guess, and kind of what I do. I guess maybe be a little more specific.
No problem. Let's talk about your romantic history and what you do.
I just made the question for myself.
You kind of did lead me to that trough.
Sorry, I got like ADHD up the, and this guy with the leaf blower is driving me nuts. Okay. So my romantic history. I am not, I'm not polyamorous, but I have casual sex on occasion. I've never been in a serious relationship. The closest I've been to a serious relationship was probably maybe 6 months, but we still didn't have a label on it. I guess I do talk about disability quite a bit. I'm a disabled person, so I have a physical disability, which I think is very intertwined with sex and relationships. I'm 27 years old. I'm still single, but very happy. I don't know.
Do you want a long-term relationship?
I think I do. I mean, it would be nice, but I feel like in this day and age, it has to be a project now. So if I do want a long-term relationship, but it's something that needs to be focused on, it's like, okay, this is a life thing. It's like losing weight, or it's like, you know, pick any goal that you're trying to accomplish. That's what getting a relationship is. It's not like, to me, I feel like it's, in the 21st century, it's not as easy as just like going to a bar, especially now because of COVID. So I haven't really been focusing on it. So I guess no. The answer, no.
I think it's really funny that you called having a relationship a project.
Oh, yeah.
Just because that could land in different ways for different people. Like there's like a project, and then there's like a project. What a project.
That's how I feel. It's like every time I fail in any way, shape, or form, or the other person fails me, I'm just like, all right, well, I'm going to take a break for like 3 years and then go back to it.
You also have your own short film. It's called Masked and Abused. It premieres, when is it going to premiere? This year?
When I get my shit together. No, I feel guilty for promoting, not guilty. It's a film. It's my very first self-produced film. I wrote it, I directed it, I'm acting in it, I'm editing it. It's basically my labor of love. And I guess I have a little bit of imposter syndrome because I know people who put out comedy shorts like this once a month and they're amazing. And this thing took me 6 months to make, but I'm really proud of it. And Skinner, who's a graphic artist, the art of Skinner, he's going to be doing some animation on it. So it's going to be quite a wild ride, I'm sure.
Is the whole thing animated or there's going to be animation?
partially animated. So live action, partially animated. It's about 3 minutes long. The premise is a mother-to-be wearing a mask and a cyborg not wearing a mask cross paths and chaos ensues.
You're really into cyborgs.
I am a cyborg.
Tell me about that.
Well, I'm part man, part machine. I use a motorized chair to get around. So it's like a kind of like an electric exoskeleton. I've got like a robotic prosthetic arm that comes out of the chair. I use ventilators to breathe at night. I'm part machine. If the electricity went out, I'd be completely fucked. But I can charge your phone. Oh, that's a good start.
Oh, wait, you can charge my phone?
Yeah, that's how I lost my virginity.
Oh, God. Okay. Wait, we have to back up. You can charge my phone, and that's how you lost virginity. Go.
Yeah. Well, when I was in college, the maintenance guy came over to change a light bulb, and he's like, can I plug my phone in somewhere? And I said, you can plug it into me, and well, one thing led to another, and that's kind of how it went.
Wait, is that story in Romantic Chorus?
I don't remember. It's such a blur, that interview. I must have just woke up or something. I hope it is. I don't think that specific story is in the film, but I may have talked about it in the interviews.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I want folks to know they can find you on Instagram at The Painted Jade, and your website is Jade Terrio. Let me spell that. TheriAult. When we come back, we're going to all be in the same room. And when I say room, I mean little boxes on the screen, and talk more about Romantic Chorus. So stay with us. Need to unwind after a long day of Zoom calls? Looking for some new self-care ideas? Or maybe you're just looking for a way to get out of a funk and start feeling like yourself again? Reset and reconnect with yourself with Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They release new stories every week, so there's always something more to explore, no matter who you're into or what you're into. Hookups, fantasies, long-term couples, they've got it, and they bring it right to your ear holes. Dipsy also has wellness sessions to help you learn more about yourself, and bedtime stories and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. And sleep has finally come to Dipsy. I think this is really great news. They've got a couple features in this department. Sleepovers features popular Dipsy characters speaking directly to listeners to say goodnight and tuck them in. They're meant to feel cozy and comforting while you drift off. Soundscapes feature calming sounds to fall asleep to that are focused on just sounds, no storytelling, no characters, just things like ocean waves and rain. I have personally been using Soundscapes to help me sleep forever, probably for more than a decade. Playing these different soothing sounds really, really resets my brain and says, okay, it's time to shut off. It's time to stop thinking and overthinking and just relax. So these soundscapes are a no-brainer for me. I love them. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipseastories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. You'll thank me. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking to several of the contributors for the film Romantic Chorus, which is a feature animated documentary with a very diverse group of people. And as they discuss sex, monogamy, fear, and technology. Okay, so Jeff, you first have to answer the question, was the story of being plugged in part of the interview in the film?
You'll have to just see the film and find out.
Oh, I have to see the film and find out.
I want to say, too, Jade was the first person I interviewed for the project.
Oh.
And it was the only video of an interview. Everybody else, it was strictly just the audio recording.
Yeah, because it occurred to me like people could be anonymous in this film, or they didn't have to show their faces, right? And that's one of the benefits of the animation. Except Jade clearly wanted to be Jade in the film. And that animation is beautiful.
And it, you know, the movie magic part is the animator who rotoscoped Jade's part in the film. The animator asked us, do you have, you know, I want to use rotoscope for Jade's part. Do you have like some video of her, some photos? And I said, well, it was the only video of the interviews we did. So yes. So it just worked out beautifully that way.
Wow, I had no idea. That was the only one.
Yeah, because a lot of the piece of animation are quite abstract. They're not necessarily what I would call representational. And I'm assuming that that is intentional.
Yes. Yes. We do have human figures in the film, but I wanted to kind of create a more hypnotic, kind of mesmerizing, almost an adventurous trip that you take when you begin to watch Romana Chorus, and really focusing more on the voices and just kind of letting yourself get washed over by the visuals, but always kind of centered on the voices.
Imani, what was your experience like being interviewed?
To my recollection, it was a comfortable experience. It was just a conversation between friends, really.
And you had known each other beforehand or no?
Yeah, like briefly before, not long, but yeah.
And I guess this question for Jade and Imani, how do you decide what to share and how much to share when you know that the thing is going to go out in the world?
Well, I'm a pretty open book in general, and I don't want to say I don't have too much that I like keep to myself, like in general. I don't know. I'm comfortable talking about these things. And I mean, I kind of have to be in the industry that I'm in. But that didn't even occur to me, really.
Jade?
Yeah, I feel very similar. I talk about sucking dick on stage all the time. So, you know, I think if I can do that, I can do a little interview, you know?
Jeff, was there anything about either of these interviews that surprised you?
Everything. I mean, the courage to speak about one's, you know, human experience with trying to connect intimately with another person. I was just kind of blown away by all of it. I guess specifically, nothing comes to mind. It's part of the process. I just enjoy, I think, like each phase of the filmmaking process. And for this project, maybe the interviews were my favorite part. And then it's like up to the collaborators, you know, to finish it. And I, you know, see things as it evolves. I mean, just hearing, I remember Jade said something about that stuck with me. You need to fall in love with something that's not a person. And I like that a lot. I've thought a lot about, in addition to what Imani shared in her interview, about how we do tend to find our identity in a relationship or in another person, or somebody else from the film explains they've been polyamorous, but then they found themselves being stretched so thin and they kind of lost their own identity in the process. So there's a lot of balancing and, you know, time management, and really it's a lot, I think, for any person to kind of juggle and come to terms with and really have like successful connections.
More people, more problems.
Possibly. And I mean, it's, I think it's interesting.
Go ahead.
No, one relationship style, I don't think is better than the other. It just depends on the person and like what their life is like before they begin something with a stranger, you know, and let them into their life. These aren't really, you know, clear, there's no real clear cut answers. I think it is kind of a work in progress. I think relationships, romance, intimacy, it's like you just learn. Hopefully you do it better the next time and you cultivate some long-lasting connections.
Jade, you have to fall in love with something other than a person. Explain that and tell me what you've fallen in love with other than a person.
Well, when I said that, I was angry and heartbroken, so don't... No, I'm just kidding. Don't worry, I'm still angry and heartbroken 3 years later. No, just kidding, that was a year ago. I still think that's true, because there gets to a point where, you know, you want this perfect trophy of a person, you want all these boxes checked, and then when you think you met that person, your mind literally tricks yourself into thinking, if you can't have that person, number one, then life is not worth living and everything sucks and everything's terrible. Number two, if you do get to have that person, you then find out that they don't check all those boxes, because they never will. And it's this big kind of like your mind playing tricks on you. And maybe it's like a fail, you know, you don't want to be kind of a tortured artist that closes yourself off to love, because that's going in the complete opposite direction. That's also dangerous. But when you fall in love with like a passion, like an art or like a something that you create, you know, then, or a hobby, or just something that you're really passionate about, that thing's never going to change. That's always going to check all the boxes. And the only boxes it's not going to check are the makings of your own mind, like your own inertia. Or lack of inertia. I guess I'm married to the things I create. So, you know, it's like giving birth to a child. Like the film I'm working on right now, I really want to do well on it, and I'm in love with that. So I'm just going to focus on that right now.
So perhaps by chance, or maybe it was fate, at the time of this recording, I just watched the season finale of The Bachelorette last night. And I like to watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette because I like lowbrow television. But I also feel like it's important, because of the bubble that I find myself in, to tap into the imagination and representation of heterosexual, cis, mainstream people. Like, I feel like I need to keep my finger on the pulse of that, right? Because otherwise, when they come to me with questions, I don't understand where they're coming from. Okay. And so what strikes me is these two things are very much in contrast, because The Bachelorette kind of always follows a formula. And it is just what Jade said. It's about checking boxes, right? That's something they actually say explicitly. He checks all the boxes for me. He's everything I want. This is what I want in a man or a woman, which seems really kind of depersonalized. Like, you came with the idea first, and then it's like, you'll fit in. Rather than meeting someone and having them sort of reveal themselves over time, and you reveal yourself over time, and then seeing like, is this a match? Is this gonna work? Does anyone else, first of all, watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette? I'm the only one. God, you people aren't watching enough television. That's what I say to everyone. But Jeff, it strikes me as like, these are the models out there for relationship building, intimacy, connection, and they're really fucked up.
I think I would add that maybe for a lot of people dating today, it's almost, you know, we're just around the corner from a new year, a new chapter. And I think it, for a lot of people, dating feels more like shopping. And I think maybe it's just like inherently, if you're using your thumb and you're just kind of going through, and then when you get into ghosting and ignoring people, it's really, there's a lot of, I think that people just kind of give up on, you know, romance, or they just try to get their flirt on somehow in public or through a friend or, you know, events and whatnot. So yeah, the checkbox thing, maybe it all goes back to ego and what you think you really want over what you really need and what's healthy for you. And nobody can kind of tell you that. I mean, it's something each person needs to figure out, you know? And, I think to your description of the show, tends to be the trend, and there's really not a lot of time probably on those shows to really kind of philosophically get into each person beyond what they look like. And
I mean, they have like 3 dates. Let's just boil it down. Like, they basically have 3 individual dates. There's these group date ridiculousness, but they have 3 dates and then
cameras around.
Yes. So it seems to me like if we're going to show people that, we also need to show them Romantic Chorus.
Yeah, double feature.
To get just a totally different perspective. It's very aesthetically different, but also philosophically different in terms of the approach to relationships. Imani, you talked about COVID and how you actually started your business because of COVID. And I'm wondering what challenges you found in relationships during this pandemic when we're all locked down and we're all boxes on a screen.
Challenges that I found dating during COVID. That could be a really long list, but I'll try to condense it.
Okay.
I think, I'll start with like one of my biggest qualms. I am queer, so I date men, non-men, all genders. With that said, my biggest qualm is with like cis men, and I think like everyone has cabin fever. It feels like everyone has cabin fever, and I'm just like, great that you want to just immediately invite yourself to my home, even though I've never met you, and you could kill me, but you know, I'm so glad you want to come over here and bang. Great. But it's like, there's no build up. Everybody just wants to like, just go 0 to 100 really fast. And like, I'm just like, I'm new here. I'm trying to like build connections with people. And you know, I have with like one person I became really good friends with. But like for the most part, it's been kind of like lackluster. And I just feel like I'm not trying to, you know, meet someone and hook up and then it doesn't work out and then do that same process with multiple people in a pandemic. I don't want to do that. I'd rather not date at all.
Right. It's weird because it's an opportunity to actually go really slow, right? So on the outside looking in, it's like, oh, this could be a really great opportunity. People can get to know each other, talk on the phone, text, write emails, Zoom, all the things.
I was going to say, I can tell you a prime example of that is like a man happened to send me a message on Snapchat, and like immediately there was a dick pic, and I'm just like, oh God, like, I didn't ask for this. Is this what we're doing now? Is this what we're doing now? We're just going to say, hi, here's my penis. And I'm just like, what do I do with this? Like,
yeah, because you think it would offer opportunities to get to know someone better. And then there would be this also this amazing buildup, which anticipation can be really hot. And also barriers to seeing each other. That is like a hot, hot thing for people. The more barriers you put in place from people connecting, this is the Romeo and Juliet situation, still true today, the more it's like, oh, I want you even more because I can't have you. And so I would think that there could be this really cool buildup. And it's like, wow, I've talked to you for 9 months and now I can finally see you 6 feet away in a park. So I think it's really interesting that it's like totally the opposite. And that people are being so flagrant about let's bang when we're not supposed to be getting together, especially with people we don't know.
Yeah, it's like, again, I think it's cabin fever. I think everyone's like cooped up and been cooped up and like they're losing their senses, especially when it comes to like sex. And it's like, especially when we go from, you live in LA, especially in like a city like LA where it's like, everybody can be out at all times and like go to bars, restaurants, you know, there are so many people who, and I think there's probably just like a high influx of people who've never done like online dating or any kind of like socially distanced dating that they just don't know how to do it. Like they've always been able to just go to a bar and, you know, pick up somebody or whatever, or, you know, meet through friends. But now it's like, well, you can't do that anymore. You have to do everything online. And people, I guess, don't know the etiquette of that. And they just, it's weird. Yeah.
I forgot that piece of it, that there are people, because I think of everyone as being, I guess, online and using apps and stuff. But yeah, there are people who meet people through community and through events and through going out. And now they like jumped on without getting the kind of like orientation. Although it seems like men sending dick pics, it just, is it natural? Is it just innate? Why do they do it? Your story is like, I hear it every day.
It literally happened to me this morning. It literally happened to me again this morning. So what I did is I took the advice of a TikToker whose name I don't know, and I rated it. I said 6 out of 10, composition is poor, lighting could be better. Black and white makes it seem dated or fake. That's what I said.
You didn't think that was artsy, the black and white dick?
No, I think it is. What are, is it for? Is it 1949? Like, what are we doing here? I want to see it in color. If you're going to send it in color so I can see what it really looks like. Otherwise, I'm going to think you like photoshopped it. The same way they don't want to see us. They don't want to see women. These same men who send dick pics, they don't want to see women with filters and makeup. I'm like, no, I don't want to see filters. I want to see what it looks like in person. If you're gonna go through the trouble of sending it, send it correctly. So 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10.
Nothing worse than a dick pic that you've applied a filter to. Come on.
I think it's kind of they think we actually want to look at it. I mean, a dick is a very utilitarian tool that is shaped and formed for a purpose, but I don't necessarily want to see pictures of it.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what was this like sort of finishing this film during an epidemic and sort of seeing some of these themes about sex and technology play out on a global scale?
It was still driven by the interviews, which were done prior. They ended in November 2019. Technology definitely was on our minds and during the discussions with the animators throughout the process of making the film. And I think Imani hits on it quite well in the film, in her interview. And you know, it is a tool, as we know, obviously, but it becomes a crutch and becomes a way for people to hide or to, you know, or to kind of play games. So I would hope that we continue to use it as a tool and maybe learn, you know, a balance of it. I think, I mean, some people are spending hours and hours and days on these apps, and I think then it can be kind of damaging to your mental health and just your life. And as Jade said earlier, you kind of put all this stock and expectation into finding this person, and you're probably going to be let down most of the time. So to remember, it still is a tool, and, you know, cultivate things maybe slowly, I think would be wise to try to do. I think that would be helpful. I like what you said, Tristan, about a healthy amount of buildup and pursuit. I think most people like to be pursued. And then when they can't get somebody initially, they have to wait to see them. You know, it does psychologically make you want to see them more.
So I want to thank all of you for taking the time to talk to me. I want to remind people the film is Romantic Chorus. It's having its world premiere at the end of the month, and you can find it at romanticchorus.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Tristan.
Thank you.
Thanks for this.
I want to shout out my engineer and editor, A-Rod at FTC Designs. You can follow him on Twitter at FTC_designs. New episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. You can find me on social media, except Facebook, at Tristan Taramino. And I hope you'll all seek out this film, tell your friends about it. It's going to be really unique. So go watch it.